And she asked us to come in, took our coats, and asked us to sit down, and said, I had a vision today that I would be visited by 10 people. You, of course, are number 7, 8, and 9. And of the 7, 8, 9, one of you would be a businessman. One of you would be a teacher of God. And one of you would be a printer. And my mind immediately went back to that scene on Paul's wall that I hadn't seen many years before. And I said, well, another lunatic. And she sat us down and was very gracious, very charming, and looked straight at Paul, knowing that he was the teacher of God, without asking, but somehow knowing, and asked what was perhaps the most bizarre question I have ever heard asked of another Jewish kid from the Bronx. And that question was, what is your opinion of Jesus? Well, the hair on the back of my neck bristled, and I got very uncomfortable because I had never heard a question put to anyone of the Jewish faith like that. And I felt totally uncomfortable for Paul at that moment. And Paul looked straight at her, into her eyes, and said, as I remember it, oh, you mean the Master J. And she shook her head, and he wheeled back immediately, something that I had never thought about. He was no doubt the greatest teacher mankind has ever known. That was a really strange answer, and one that I totally did not expect. And with that, this lady went to a chest of drawers sitting not too far away, pulled out a gray box, and said, you are to have this, and placed into his hands a box and said, gentlemen, I'm very tired. If you'll excuse me, I'd like to go to bed. And we exited. And the whole meeting had not taken perhaps more than 15 minutes. And as we walked out of the apartment, a somewhat bizarre incident occurred. Paul was holding the box, kind of clutching the box, and we were in the elevator, and he said, do you know what I've got in my hands? And I quipped, looks like a gray box. Full of papers. And he said, no. He said, I have heard a tape, a somewhat secret tape, that had been circulating around, that there is indeed a manuscript that people are talking about as a possible third testament, and this is it. And he said, did you feel the presence of others in the room? And I said to myself, here we go again. And something happened that completely stopped me in my tracks. My cousin Irv, an accountant and a businessman, who knew that Paul was crazier than I knew he was, said yes. I heard a very high-pitched whistling sound in the room, and Paul very knowingly shook his head. Yes, there were others in the room with us. Well, I figured now I got to deal with two lunatics. And we went on our way to our parapsychology meeting. And nothing much happened, as usual, at that meeting, except a lot of arguing and bantering and bickering and pleading for space and getting the lead stories. And we left the meeting, and Paul was somewhat aglow with his box. He hadn't let go of it all evening. We stopped at an all-night diner back in Long Island, had coffee, and Paul started to tell us about this tape he had heard circulated by a man by the name of Douglas Dean. And that indeed this was a very, very, very secretive piece of work that no one in the world knew anything about, and that people were indeed talking about as a thought system that was coming forth to help people truly understand what the true message was all about. And we finished our coffee and went on our separate ways. And Paul, in leaving, said, I'm going to lock myself in my room and read this material and not come out until I finish it. And I said to him, well, I'll see you in about 6 months. About 4 days later, Paul came by my office, and at that time, I owned and operated an advertising agency on the second floor of the Huntington Quadrangle and had started a quick printing operation on the lower part of the Huntington Quadrangle. And he came in with his box tucked under his arm. And he said, Saul, I have to make Xerox copies of this manuscript. And as any good Jewish businessman from the Bronx would ask, how many pages is it? And he said, 1,500. Dollar signs lit up in my eyes. And I said, let me see, lightning quick. In those days, I got the exorbitant fee of a quarter of Xerox, and I did some real fast calculating, and I figured that that was going to make my day. And what was about to happen to me that day was miracle number two. Something took hold of my vocal cords, I know not what. And I said, make all the copies you want, it's on me. And I pinched myself, why did I say that? And he started making his copies. And every once in a while, I'd walk over and pick up a sheet and look at it and say, what is this gibberish? Looked like it was written in English. I recognized words, but I put none of it together. hadn't the vaguest idea what it was talking about. And Paul very diligently kept making his copies. And it took him a couple of days to finish off all of the copies. And he said, "Saul, this is the most fantastic material I have ever laid my eyes on." Knowing that he was crazy, that didn't impress me. I was kind of thinking at that time about how much money I had lost by making him not pay for the copy. And he took the copies and went on his way. Somehow or another, about a week went by, and it was a Sunday, and I had nothing planned for that particular day. And I said to my wife, "What do you say we take a ride over to Paul Steinberg?" And she said, "Are you crazy?" She said, "He's crazy." And we had not seen him socially, I guess, for about 17 or 18 years. And hadn't been out to his house, even though he lived not too far away. And something, I guess, in her said, "Well, I'm ready for another shocking experience. It's been almost 20 years since the last one. Maybe." And I called him, and I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Nothing. Why don't you come over?" And I said, "Okay, we're going to take a ride this afternoon. We'll come over." Got directions. And we went over to his house. As we were sitting having coffee at his kitchen table, telephone rang. And Paul got up and said, "Hi, how are you?" And after a few pleasantries and some conversation, I heard him say, "Well, why don't you ask him? He's sitting right here." And he said, "Telephone." I said, "For me?" I said, "Nobody even knows I'm here. How could it be for me?" And he says, "Well, it's for you." And I got on the telephone. And it was a woman's voice. And she introduced herself. And said, "We have had many, many people come forth who have volunteered to be the printers for A Course in Miracles." And we were told that they were not to be the people to do the work. And your name came through as the person who is to be the printer. And I said kind of timidly, "My name?" And Miracle 3 was about to enter into my life. I said I would be honored to print A Course in Miracles. I didn't even know what the Course in Miracles was. I thought I was dealing with total lunatics, and up to that point, the only way I did any kind of work was with estimates, with figures, with numbers, with deposits. And here I was accepting or electing to do something, and I had no idea what I was agreeing to do. Very unlike me as a businessman. And this woman said, "Why don't you come into New York?" And she says, "You'll meet the people involved, and we'll see what we want to do about getting this work going." And again, I agreed that we would get together in the next day or two, and off I went back into New York City. And Miracle 4 was about to happen. I sent out Abdullah. And got a parking space on 81st Street in Central Park West. And for the very first time, perhaps, I said, maybe there's something to this. Nothing impressed me more than getting a parking space in those days. Well, we went up into this parlor again, only this time we were ushered into the living room. And there was this very beautiful dark-haired lady, her husband, a somewhat older lady, a man, and another man, and Paul and I. And I was introduced to the older lady and told that her name was Dr. Helen. And I said to myself, I remember, doesn't she have a last name? But all I got was Dr. Helen. And then I was introduced to another man and was told, this is Dr. Bill. This sounded like something out of a soap opera. And then I was introduced to a third man and told, this is Dr. Ken. And he had a last name, which they laid on me, and that was Wapnick. I said, well, I'm glad somebody is like me, has two names. And we sat down and started to discuss putting together this massive piece of work. And what was going through my mind, for the most part, at that moment was, how the hell am I going to get paid for this job? I wonder if these people have the money to do this, because I knew that it would be a really large project and probably the largest thing I'd ever done. And the little dark-haired lady said to me, whatever you need will be taken care of. And I thought to myself, what does that mean? And she must have read my mind. She said, whatever the costs of this project are, you will be supplied with the money to do it. And I said, well, thank God for that. And they asked me what kind of typefaces I thought we should use, and they asked me what kind of binding I thought we should use, and they asked me about how big the books might be, and I answered truthfully, I really didn't know, because it was such a massive job, I just didn't have the experience or the background to put together the figures needed, but that I would certainly take it back to the office and try. And I did that, but before leaving, they did something which for the very first time in my life I was exposed to. They said, let's ask about what color cover and what kind of material to use on the cover. And I looked around and said to myself, who are we asking? And they said, everyone join hands. We all closed our eyes. I didn't. But when I saw everyone else with their eyes closed, I figured I better do that too. Otherwise, I'm liable to get a lightning bolt from somewhere. And I closed my eyes as well. And what we were doing was, for the very first time in my life, we were asking for guidance on something that seemed as inconsequential as what kind of cover material to use for the binding of a book. And that took about 2 minutes or so. And Dr. Helen said, I've got it. And I looked at Dr. Helen and said, what is it that you've got? And said, I have the answer. And I said, that's strange. I didn't hear a thing. Nor was I told anything. But she said, the cover is to be blue. And I said, you got that in your meditation? She said, yes, I did. And I said, fine. And I left that day, went back to get started on working on figuring what it would cost to produce these books. And it took me several days to get all the figures I needed. And in those days, I didn't own a printing press. What I was an advertising agency and a printing broker, in that I went around printing jobs, having had a good solid background in printing, and printed jobs for other people through other printers. And I got all my prices together and gave them the figures. And again, this woman said to me, it will be taken care of. That didn't sit all that well with me at that point, because I didn't have too much faith in people in those days. But what happened a couple of days later was somewhat bizarre. I got a check in the mail from, of all places, Mexico, in a large amount of money. And my exclamation when I opened that envelope with the check, well, maybe miracles really do happen. And we started work. And the work was going along really well. I made a couple of trips into New York with type styles and cover selections, and everything was flowing, and this little lady asked me at one point, when do you think the books will be completed? And I said, and this was certainly unorthodox for me, when would you like to have them completed? Here I was putting myself on the line and really not having too much control over the fate of final manufacturing, being a broker, and asking her what she liked and what she wanted. And she said, it would be really lovely, being that I'm going out to California in late June, if we had these books ready, let's say, by June 22nd. And I started to laugh. I said, June 22nd? It was already late March. The typesetting. But I said something out of character for me. I said, let's see if we can get it done. And I started working longer days and longer nights, getting the type into shape. And I was just about completed with the typesetting, which was voluminous. And I got a frantic call one morning, and it was again this lady saying to me, stop the presses. I said, stop the presses? We're nowhere near the presses. We're still in the typesetting. And she said, it's all wrong. And I said to myself, where is the nearest window? Fortunately, the office I had in those days had double pane glass sealed, and I couldn't go through one of them. And she said, it's all wrong. I said, it's all wrong. I said, what do you mean it's all wrong? And she said, well, we asked. And I was hearing this word again, asked. And we were told the way we're doing it is all wrong. And I said, what's wrong about it? And in my zeal to save money for them, what I did, as most typographers would do, I had set the type in what we now know as the workbook, continuous. And apparently the powers that be said that's not the way the workbook is to be used. The workbook has to start and end each page with its own lesson. And I said to myself, this is a disaster. Because I've got all this work done, and by these people asking someone, I've got to take all this work, months of work, and redo it. And she wasn't too upset about it, and for some strange reason, I said, okay, don't worry about it. I'll just redo it. Very much unlike me. Very much like it. Unlike anyone. I wasn't the least bit upset about it. Frantic, but not upset. Well, we continued, and in looking at the work, it made sense to me at that time that she was right, and that when somebody was to do a lesson, due to the fact that there were 365 lessons, it was only logical that each lesson should be presented and done on its own day and that there should be a break for the sake of the reader and the person doing the lesson. And we went ahead and caught up to ourselves and working through the wee hours again. And I got another frantic phone call. Stop the presses again. And I said, we're nowhere near the presses again. What now? And this lady said, the type is wrong. And I said, the type is wrong? And I said, but you people asked and were told that the type was right. How could it be wrong?